My name's Mike. Am I God?
Mike.
Wow, what is this thing? A lot of weird things up here. Anyway, my name's Mike. I have a sobriety date. It's August 13th in 1989. I have a sponsor, and I have a home group. If you get nothing else out of me tonight, those are probably the three most important possessions I have, if you call them possessions, I'm not sure, but I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor, as they like to say nowadays. He knows that because I call him regularly. I have done that, whether my current sponsor or my first sponsor. As Joe said, we had the same sponsor together. I had him for 20 years. Joe has been sober a little longer than me, so he had Frank a little longer than that. And then when he passed away, I got Johnny as my sponsor, and he's been my sponsor for 15 years now. And I call. I don't know about you, but I call 2, 3, 4 times a week. And I try to spend time with my sponsor. It was something that was taught to me from the very beginning. I would joke with Johnny. I live in the Washington, D.C. area, and Johnny lives out here in California. And I would joke with him and say, I feel better if I'm in the same zip code as you. I mean, I've always had that with my sponsor, just a sense of comfort. Unless I'm acting up and trying to hide something, then we have a different sense, but that's a different story. But I've always had a sponsor, and I always try to be as open with my sponsor as possible, if for no other reason than to make sure that they have enough information to help direct me. In the beginning, I wasn't like that. If I didn't call my sponsor that day, I probably wasn't going to the meeting. That's when I was a newcomer. So I have a home group. I'm accountable to that home group. And that's what my home group gave me more than anything, is a sense of accountability. And I didn't know being accountable to anything had any value in my life when I was drinking. Because I just wanted to do what I wanted to do I didn't want anybody to question me. I didn't want anybody to tell me what to do. I still am not a big fan of those things. But what I have learned is being accountable to a home group in Alcoholics Anonymous has made my life freer than it ever was long before I got here. As a result of some willingness to be accountable to this home group and to participate in my home group, my life opened up and became more and more free, as counterintuitive as that may sound. Somehow by being accountable to you and being involved in the community of Alcoholics Anonymous that I got sober with, it opened up the world for me so that I could participate in a way I never could while I was drinking. Because I don't know about you, but when I drank, I couldn't hardly get out of the house, let alone the neighborhood. Okay? When I drank, well, I also usually got arrested for DWI, so, you know, drunk driving, so I didn't get very far when I drank. I have a sobriety date, as I said, August 13th in 1989, and I hope that I never become so arrogant as to think that date can't change. I hope I never get it into my sick head that somehow, that, as my sponsor says, I'm entitled to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope I never believe that somehow I'm entitled to this. I hope I always understand that this is some type of grace and some type of privilege to be here with you. Because I don't know about you, but when I got here, by the time I got to AA, people weren't asking me to come back. People really didn't want me unsupervised in their homes. My family didn't really want me unsupervised in their home. I have an older sister. She was living in San Diego at the time. And she said I could come visit. But the day I was supposed to leave was the day I would leave. The visit had a certain time span. And she's like, if you want to stay longer, that's fine. There's plenty of parks in San Diego. You can sleep on the park bench. Okay? That's what I brought to the party. You could put up with me. And jobs were this kind of the same way. They put up with me for about a week, and then they're like, you got to go. Because I just was a pain in the butt. And I would like to say that I was some kind of gangster, some kind of tough guy. I was none of those things. As my sponsor said to me when I did my fourth and fifth step, I rose to the level of pain in the ass. That's as good as I got at being bad. Okay. I was kind of like a gnat. An annoying gnat, but I was a gnat. That you could never quite get away, you know. I grew up in the 70s. It was great. I loved it. Mom would kick you out in the morning, and you had to be back by the time the streetlights came on. If you heard your mother call your full name from the doorstep, you knew you were in trouble. If I heard Philip Michael Pickrell get your blankety-blank in his house right now, I definitely knew I was in trouble. And that my next step would be to go upstairs probably and get my belt so I could get my whipping. And that's not good or bad. It's just was my childhood. I'm not judging that one way or the other. But I will say this. My parents loved me. I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, right outside Washington, D.C. My dad was a government lawyer. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. I wanted a lot of things. But I had everything I needed. I had food, I had clothes, I had shelter. I went to a good public school. My parents tried to take care of me. By the time I was 6 years old, I was being brought home by the police for throwing rocks and sticks at police cars or any other car that drove by. I was a thief out of the gate. If I saw it and I wanted it, I was stealing it. My mom caught me stealing one time out of the grocery store, and she turned around, took me back in, and promptly made me give it back. I kept stealing. If you were my friend, if you had something I wanted, I probably was going to try to steal it if I could figure out how to do it. But I would still consider you a friend. I didn't think you weren't my friend. I just wanted it. That's how I've always been wired. I have always felt a little off and a little different. Like Joe said, I never felt connected to anybody. And I wasn't that way for a day, a week, a month, a year. I've been that way I'm 62 years old now, and there's days I get the feeling like that now. The only thing that has ever quieted it down or offsetted that is a shot of Jack Daniels or Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. And I was in a therapeutic community for 18 months. So if you're in enough of a controlled environment, it kind of helps, but even then, I had a lot of anxiousness. So I was, in some ways, a drink waiting to happen. But instead, I got sent to a psychologist because my parents loved me. They want to help me. And I was diagnosed with hyperactivity with minimal brain dysfunction. You now know it as ADDD or whatever it is, hyperactive. ADHD, that's it, okay? And they gave me Dexedrine and some type of down every morning for the next 3 years. That doesn't make me an alcoholic. Doesn't make me anything. Maybe hyperactive, I guess. I've always been a ready, fire, aim kind of kid. I give you that example for two reasons. One, that's just part of my story. That's just part of the circumstances of my life. Not good, not bad, just it is what it is. The other reason is my parents tried to take care of me. Now, I'm not saying that's everybody's story, but that's my story. And if you looked at my life from the outside, there's no reason why I should be alcoholic. Okay? I was in remedial reading in elementary school. This will probably be very politically incorrect. If I had to take the bus to school, I might have been put on the short bus because of it. Okay? I couldn't comprehend when I read. I barely could read. So I had to have remedial reading, remedial writing in elementary school. Again, none of that makes me alcoholic. Those are just the circumstances of my life. And there were people there who tried to help me. And that's a theme throughout my life. There were people who wanted to help me, who wanted me to do well, who invested themselves into me. I used to say that I didn't care. That's why I did the things I did. It had nothing to do with that. This is how I lived my life. You weren't even on the radar. You weren't even there unless you had something I wanted or needed. And then once I got it, I would take you and put you back up on the shelf. And then I'd go do whatever I was doing. and continued my selfish, self-centered walk through life. And then I would expect you to be on the shelf when I came back, and obviously you wouldn't be, because people don't like being treated that way. I don't like being treated that way. Okay, but that's how I treated people most of my life. And I still do that sometimes. I'm not proud of it, but I still act that way because I'm still selfish and self-centered. It's gotten remarkably better. I am an alcoholic, not because I had ADHD, not because I went to remedial reading, not because my parents divorced when I was in elementary school, not because I broke into houses as a sixth grader, not because I got sent to live with my mother in Michigan after ninth grade because my dad was tired of my crap. I am an alcoholic because, as Joe said, when I take the first drink, something happens and I can't stop. And maybe even more importantly, when I set it down and I know that drinking today would be a bad idea, I have no control over that. See, because on the inside, I'm restless, irritable, and discontented until I take a shot of Jack Daniels and go, "Ah." Alcohol did that for me every time. When I came in here tonight, we were laughing and joking, and over time of being here for the last, I don't know, we got here around 6:30 or so, I have gone, "Ah." Maybe AA has an answer. Maybe AA can do for me the same thing that Jack Daniels does for me. See, I don't know about you, but I got a head that's always loud. Okay? Always telling. In my case, I wish it was different for me, but in my case, my head has always told me, "You're not good enough, you're not good looking enough, you're not smart enough, you don't know how to interact enough. Fill in enough. I ain't got it." Even as Joe, you know, as they're handing me the most valuable player trophy for the game, on the inside, I know that I am not enough. I know it to the core of my being. And not only am I not enough, I never will be. That's where I live. And when I drink, I don't care about that. Which really, you know, might not be a bad thing, except for what happens after I take the first drink. And even more importantly, the fact that the book tells me that I'm selfish and self-centered, and that is the root of my alcoholism. Okay? This selfishness and this self-centeredness drives me in such a way that I live a life that at the end of the day, really, I'm ashamed of. I treat people in a way I don't want to, but at some point I start to treat people in a way that makes me feel bad. That when I put my head down on my pillow at night and I close my eyes, and you have that place between you close your eyes when you're kind of awake and asleep, that place that you don't tell nobody about? I don't. Where everything that I've done, every little nickel and dime piece of crap thing I've done, comes back to me. That's why I drink. Because I can't live with that. I can't live with that. It hurts. I don't know how to live out in that world. That world out there terrifies me. I don't know how to be with those people, because to me, it's those people. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to interact with them. So I drink. I don't get drunk every time I drink, but when I take that first drink, I don't know where the train's going. I'm going with the train, and I don't know where it's stopping. I chuckle at people who say I was an alcoholic before they took their first drink. I don't understand that. I think you got to drink to be alcoholic. That's just me. I'm just saying. Somehow, Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, drink, alcohol's got to have a little bit to do with it just based on the title. Okay? And I drank, and I loved it. I loved it. Didn't like consequences so much, but I loved it. There's nothing, you know, you're sitting outside with your buddies at the barbecue or working on your car, drinking some cold beer, just hanging out. There's nothing like it. In that place, I felt a little connected, right? On a nice spring day. But again, it didn't stop there for me. It never stopped there for me. I get up and start doing things. In particular, I start driving a car. Okay? And then the red lights start flashing behind me. And then I'm getting arrested again. And after a while, they get tired of, even though I'm a little gnat, right? People get tired of it. The police definitely get tired of it. The neighbors get tired of watching me walk up to somebody's house and kick the door in because I just think I'm entitled to it. You know. My friends get tired of me stealing from them. My mom and dad get tired of me breaking their hearts. They didn't want me to be an alcoholic. They didn't want me to act like that when they brought me into this world. They wanted something better for their son, as evidenced by their attempts to take, you know, make sure I was okay. So as I said, I'll try and move this along here. I started drinking and doing drugs when I was in sixth grade. By the time I was in ninth grade, I had been basically thrown out of the state of Maryland for being a pain in the butt. The neighbors wanted me in military school. The police knew I was dealing drugs and were going to arrest me, and my dad was tired of it, and he sent me to live with my mother. And my dad hated my mother after the divorce, and my dad was alcoholic. And I'm sure that I can just imagine that resentment, and yet he still sent me to live with my mom. That's how much I wore out that welcome. I moved from right outside Washington, D.C. to right outside Detroit, Michigan in the late 70s. As I used to joke around, it would be like running into that wall at about 100 miles an hour. That's the difference between those two places. But nothing changed. I kept drinking, I kept drugging, I kept stealing, I kept getting in trouble. And the music was the same. When I was just before I turned 19, my dad had been sober a year. He had an aneurysm. He went into the intensive care unit at the local hospital. He died in March of 82. Was it March? Right in there, March of 82. I got roughly $100,000 worth of inheritance. And by February of 1983, I was broke. I was looking at 2.5 years in prison, and I had no answers. I had a friend who said, go to jail, it'll make you a man. I'm thinking, I'm not so sure about that. I wanted no parts of jail. I may be 200 plus pounds now. Then I was about 150. And I ain't tough. Okay? So in about March of that year, for those who remember 1983, if the blackouts were too much, I understand. HBO had just come out. We were stealing it. And I'm watching HBO after midnight. No longer get the thing, right? And you get the commercial. We all know what the commercial is, right? If you got a problem with drugs and alcohol, call this number. I laugh. I do the bong hit. Sure, take another drink off my beer. 2 weeks later, I called that number. It was a 36-month program. Therapeutic community. Thank you, California. And because the idea came from California, that's why I say thank you, California. Now do the math. I'm volunteering to go into this rehab for 36 months. I have sponsored men who were in jail. And they informed me that I might have done 18 months of that 2.5-year sentence. That's how much I don't want to go to prison. I'm willing to go 3 years here, but I don't want to go there. That's how much, right? I walk in, there's a guy who said, if you don't do something different, you're going to do the installment plan to life in prison. I believed him. It's the only other place besides Alcoholics Anonymous where I stayed sober for any amount of time. I joke about Second Genesis, but it saved my life because it gave me a little glimpse of the fact that maybe I could be sober. Maybe I could live a different way. And I'm in this community and I'm part of this community and it's enabling me to stay on the planet, really. And I'm sober. I leave there, I graduate, I leave there, I go to school in Vermont, college, and I would call back to this facility a couple times a week because I'm in a dorm with college kids. You know what they're doing, right? And I'm trying to be sober. But I have this connection with these people in this dorm, in this facility, this rehab. So it keeps me on the planet a little bit. It allows me to quiet down the brain and I don't got to rush out and take a drink. I don't want to go to AA. My dad died sober in AA. My sister was in AA. I don't want any part of Alcoholics Anonymous. Eventually, the people I'm connected to at the rehab, they start drinking and doing drugs again, and I got nobody. Because I don't go to AA and find some community in AA. I'm not connected to that rehab anymore because the people I knew are gone and they're drinking. So I do what I know to do. I start running around with the people I've known all my life. And I'm running around with my friend, and one night he shows up with an 8-ball of cocaine. And I go, hey, can I just do a little rub on my gums, right? That's not relapse, come on. Really? Just a little rub. Now, the half 8-ball I did later on that night, that's a relapse. There's no way around that. Right? I go back to college for my second year. I graduate. I got an associate's degree. I move back to Michigan. I'm working 2 jobs. I'm saving money. I look like I'm doing well. I take this girl out on a date, and she says, I want wine coolers. I'm like, damn, I do too. It's all it took. And I'm gone for 3 years. I'm on that train, and that train's going wherever it's going, and it's taking me with it. And I got no more control over that train than, you know, the bug on the log going down the river. And I do what I always do. I got arrested for drunk driving again in rural Virginia, which is not a good idea. I go to court. They send me to this alcohol class. And the guy says, we suggest you don't drink for 17 weeks, which is comical to me. But they're pretty clear about don't drink on Thursdays, because that's the day of the class, right? About halfway through, they do the eval. You know the eval they do, right? And the guy goes, did you stop drinking? And I didn't see any reason why. I go, no. You said no drinking on Thursdays. So he goes, look, if you don't stop drinking for the next 6 weeks, I got to send you back to court. Now, I'm pissed, but I'm not mad at him. I'm pissed because I know there's no way on God's green earth I'm going to not drink for the next 6 weeks. It's not going to happen. And I believe in that moment, though I didn't stay sober from that moment on, I believe in that moment there was a surrender in me to the fact that I was powerless over alcohol. And I know that in retrospect. But you can surrender to being powerless all you want. But you got to do something. About 2 weeks later, I finally did something. That Saturday night of August the 12th, I was drinking Budweiser with my buddy because I drink Budweiser. It was like an kind of night. Not real good, not bad. Just we're just drinking beer. I don't get arrested. Nobody gets hurt. Everything's fine. I'm not okay. The next day, on Sunday, August 13th in 1989, I'm behind on court slips. We're out here, court cards. And I need to go to a meeting. And I go to a meeting, and Joe will know the name, but it's a place called the Del Rey Club. It was a Sunday night meeting. It was an 8 o'clock meeting. And the meeting was on willingness that night, and somewhere in my sick, demented little brain, I knew if I could be willing long enough, I had a shot at this thing, but I didn't know what I was looking at. I didn't know I was looking at the thing I'd sold my soul for. I didn't know I was looking at the answer to my problems. I didn't know this was going to change my life and I would be standing here with you 35 years later. I had no idea that's what was ahead for me. I didn't know that as a result of walking into that room that night, that by being willing to listen to a sponsor and to subject myself to the process of those steps, that I would be afforded a life beyond my wildest imagination. Okay? And I'm not even really talking about the fact that because of my job, I've traveled the world, I've gotten to do tons of things. What I'm talking about is beyond my wildest imagination is a peace of mind and a promise that the book says. The book tells me that if I do these things, my problem will be solved. That the drink will be removed. That I'm not fighting the drink. Because I don't want to drink. That noise in my head is quiet most days. When I put my head on my pillow at night, I go to sleep. Ask my wife, she'll tell you. I start snoring quick. Okay? And if I'm churning about something and I can't quite sleep, because I still call my sponsor regularly and I still go to meetings regularly, when I call him, the first thing I talk to him about is, yeah, I'm churning about this thing. I'm not quite right. And the answer is what the answer has always been. Never looks like the answer. Go pick up chairs. Go to the meeting. Go be with other people. Go try and help somebody. Go be of service. Go participate in this community you say you love. One of the major ways I serve my community is I love to cook for people. My sponsor taught me that. My sponsor was a little Italian guy, shorter than Mark, you know. And he taught Joe and I how to cook. Because we were his guinea pigs when he was learning how to cook. But in my case, right, because of my self-centeredness, my uncomfortability, right, if I'm standing here cooking at the grill, and you're coming by and getting some food, I can interact with you, and I can feel like I'm a part of, because I am, and I can chat with you. And when you're socially inept like me, which goes like this, hello, hello, how are you? I'm good, how are you? Okay, I'm done. In AA, that's okay. And then they go, you want a hamburger? And they go, yes, thank you, please. I give them a hamburger, and they move along. And then I do the same thing with the next person who comes down the line. It doesn't seem like much of a life, but it's fabulous. What a life. I may end a little early, but what it has done for me beyond, I was there to take care of my mom when she, at the end of her life, to do the things that men do for their mothers when they're dying. And I knew I could, I was not one of them. I'm not a man. I knew it. And yet AA taught me how to be a man and show up for my mother, take care of my mom at the end. And I have a son. Well, I have two sons, but my oldest son, I wasn't there. I wasn't a father. I wasn't there. I was in AA, but I was not there. He grew up with his mother. And at about 16 years old, I started interacting with him more and more. And over the last 19 years now, I've made my amends. And that relationship has been repaired. I don't feel the guilt I used to feel about having not been there as his father. I'm not saying it's all gone, but it's mostly gone. And when I feel it, there's people in my life who remind me, you've done it. This is, you know, don't do this to yourself, basically, right? Go help an alcoholic who needs help. And AA has allowed me to be his father. After years of walking away, not being his father. And one of the greatest gifts I've been given is he has four kids, him and his wife. And last summer, my wife and I took the kids for about a week. And when we dropped them off, it occurred to me the gift my son had given me. And I gave him a hug and I just thanked him for allowing me to have a part in his kid's life. I wasn't entitled to that. I hadn't been there for him. And I apologized for the fact that I hadn't been there for him. And I just said thank you for the gift he had given me, because it's a gift. And my wife and I went home from Tennessee back to Virginia. My son had a reaction to that. It kicked up feelings in him. And he was still mad at me. There were still things, work we had to do. And you know what he was really mad about? And he has said to me that he admires what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, he had watched me give to you guys. He had watched me give to his kids, which he loved. But in his own way, he's like, well, what about me? Which was a legitimate question. So I talked to my sponsor and I talked to my wife, and we started to come up with ways that I could just go be with him. And in August of last year, my son had a breakdown and went to a psych unit. I still don't know what to do. My wife's looking at me like, why aren't you on the plane yet? And I'm thinking, oh yeah, I probably should be. I call my sponsor. He's like, yeah, you probably should be. See, but remember I said selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem, including my alcoholism? My wife and I are supposed to go to North Carolina the following week. And there's a part of me going, I want to go to the beach. I don't want to go to Nashville, Tennessee. I want to go sit on the beach. But you see, AA taught me, my first sponsor would have gotten up out of his grave and hit me with my own hat if I hadn't. Okay? Get on the damn plane and go be with your son. And every night I would call my wife. I'd be like, can I come home? I want to come home. I'm like a 2-year-old at camp, right? But I was there because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not because of me. Because of AA and a God that you gave me. In the book it says, don't worry about God. If you're worried about God, don't worry about it. In the book it tells me very clearly, in the second step, if I do the things that are in this book, I will find a power that will solve my problem. My problem is I am an alcoholic. And I have done the things in this book that it has asked me to do. And it has solved my problem. It has relieved me of my alcoholism for today. And as a result of the power I found there, I was able to get on a plane and go to the psych unit at Vanderbilt University and see my son there and to give him a hug and tell him I love him. And for him to know that his father was there for him. You guys taught me how to do that. That's the gift you gave me that I can never repay. AA is so much more than just not drinking. But it starts with not drinking. And AA, as I said, has given me a life where I don't want to drink. I want no part of fuzzing my brain. No part of it. It doesn't mean I'm cured. You let me act the fool, start being really selfish and self-centered for a long enough period of time, and let me get away from you, I will drink again. And sadly, I've had friends do it very recently. A guy was 16 years that Joe and I know very well. He started drinking again. A guy with a small baby hadn't been going to meetings. And I guess he figured he could still do heroin. Dead. A woman that Joe and I knew, she had it became so crazy that she hung herself from the banister at her parents' house. That's what happens to me if I don't do this. And yet, I know knowing that won't keep me sober. I have to do this. I have to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And just like you guys did 35 years ago, nobody told me not to come back. You said, keep coming back. I'm like a bad penny. I ain't leaving. If you told me not to come back, I might not have. But you've never said that to me. As a friend of mine and Joe's says all the time, in AA, there's always room for one more. Always room for one more. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. And if no one's told you they love you today, I love you. And there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Thank you.